It is a wet, rainy Monday, taking you home one day in the books, four to go with this work week. And this is the Sports Rush, your daily local sports fix, 4 to 6. I am Brett Rump, along with Caleb Hatch. You're connected on the Parkview Sports Medicine text line, 46862. Coming up in 20 minutes, we've got our 15 Minutes with Fish. It's legendary Hall of Fame play-by-play man for the Indiana Hoosiers, Don Fisher. And we'll talk to him about, well, we've got to talk to him about what happened with the Indiana Hoosiers against the Ohio State Buckeyes on Saturday. We can start to transition, though, into basketball season. You know, Caleb, this is kind of a typical year down in Bloomington. Like last year, football got a lot of attention, maybe even more so than basketball because of the great success the football team was having. But usually in Bloomington, by about week four of the football season, it becomes basketball season. I think this year we're seeing exactly that I think most Indiana fans are ready for basketball to begin. And so we'll transition with Fish a little bit into basketball today. And of course, we have Don Fisher on the show every Monday, our 15 Minutes with Fish, presented by Cruzy Automotive Service. Also coming up on the way, a World Series is set. Not who I thought it would be, but we've got a matchup, and we'll talk about that coming up. Also, Comets talk. They got the season underway and did it right on Saturday night. Fell behind, but found a way to come back and satisfy the home crowd of about 7,500 people out at the Allen County War Memorial Coliseum. And so the Comets 1-0. Now they wait until this weekend to play their second game. They'll go up to Kalamazoo and play a road game this weekend before they then, I guess, really get the season started. The following week, they'll be back on Coliseum ice the following weekend. 46862, Parkview Sports Medicine text line. Did get a text that came in, said, shout out to the South Adams volleyball team winning the Elwood Regional, sweeping Rossville and Madison Grant 3-0 to win their second ever regional championship, advancing to the Final Four at the Huntington Semi-State with number one Andrean next up for the seventh-ranked South Adams Starfires. Also, big congrats to the Homestead Spartans ladies soccer team. They ended up having to go to penalty kicks, but 3-2, they won it in penalty kicks and advance now to the state championship in girls soccer. So congratulations to them as well. I know I'm probably missing somebody, and I'll probably get a text on another high school team that I need to give a shout-out to, but I only see what I see. And so if I've missed something, go ahead and text it to us, 46862, 46862, Parkview Sports Medicine, text line. Colts last night did what they had to do. In fact, they've really got their work cut out for them because they have almost no margin for error. Because of the Tennessee schedule from here on out, the Titans were able to get past the Chiefs convincingly yesterday. That's going to make it even more difficult for the Colts to make up for that rough start and find a way to pass the Titans to win the AFC South. But the Colts did take care of their own business in the rain, a rare storm that hit San Francisco. What'd you call it? The cyclone bomb or something?
A bomb cyclone.
Bomb cyclone. And then they had the atmospheric river, which basically just fed water nonstop right into the San Francisco Bay Area. Of course, the stadium to the south end of the bay. And so it was included in that heavy rain throughout the night. Colts seemed to handle it better than San Francisco. In fact, Jimmy Garoppolo didn't handle it well at all. Every time he went to pass, it looked like the ball was slipping out of his hand. He just didn't seem like he was real comfortable. The Colts, Carson Wentz, looked much more comfortable throwing the football, took some shots deep down the field, which I was very glad to see. Colts weren't perfect last night. They had a dropped pass that could have been a touchdown on a wheel route to Nyheim Hines, where he was wide open going down the sideline. But overall, I thought the play calling and play execution was much better. Jonathan Taylor, of course, another good game running the football. Carson Wentz, very efficient at quarterback, did not have an interception, even though you're probably saying, wait, I saw him throw a pick at the 7-yard line. Well, the NFL came in later in the game, if you missed it, and actually reversed that call and ruled that it was a fumble and not an interception. So Carson Wentz on the year still with just one INT, which leads all starting quarterbacks in the NFL. Who'd have thought we'd have been talking about that stat after seven games? Colts now 3-4, but they've got a lot of work to do because if they don't catch Tennessee, then you'd start talking about the wild card. And there are so many teams locked up right now in the AFC. 12 teams right now, 3-4 or better. And the Colts sitting at 3-4, which means that's the number of teams they'd have to jump over. And of course, you'll have your division winners among that group, but it's not going to be easy. But I guess a good win, beating up on a team that's down right now. But they did get Garoppolo back. They don't have Kittle. But overall, how do you rate this win? On the road, bad conditions for a team that has been struggling and does have some injuries of its own, especially in the secondary, which it got worse as the game went on yesterday. How do you rate this win? I would say very good win, not totally unexpected.
I would say they won their first true toss-up game of the season, and that's a sign that they have a chance. I'm not saying they're going to, but I'm saying they still have a chance to win the division. Obviously, this Sunday will be the true indicator of what we can expect going forward the rest of the season, because, I mean, they got a couple of gimme games. If they lose to the Jets or the Jags in the 2 weeks following the Titans game, I mean, you can write off the division in any kind of success after that. But I'd say that the Niners game was an important step, but ultimately we'll get our first true idea of how this Colts team has grown throughout the season Sunday against the Titans.
I just don't think with the Titans remaining schedule, first of all, if the Colts lose to the Titans with who the Titans have on their remaining schedule, no chance of winning the AFC South. There is absolutely no possible comeback from it. And I don't care if you have an injury to Derrick Henry, if you have an injury to Ryan Tannehill, it's too much for the Colts to overcome with Tennessee having not only a three-game lead in the standings, but then a four-game lead if you give Tennessee the tiebreaker. That means Tennessee would have to lose four times in their remaining games. And what Tennessee faces after the Colts is they do go to the Rams, and that will be a tough win for the Titans. But then they have the Saints at home. They will have the Texans twice, the Jaguars twice, and they'll also play at the Patriots, at the Steelers, and host the 49ers and Dolphins. To me, I don't see four losses in that group. In fact, I would be surprised if we see more than two losses in that group. And that means even if the Colts beat the Titans on Sunday, the Colts would still have to win out almost every game. They'd have basically a margin of one that they could lose and still be AFC South champions. And you look at the Colts schedule compared to the Titans. I mean, the Titans obviously don't have all that difficult of a schedule. What the Colts have ahead of them, they've got some difficult games. Now, they do play the Jets next week after they play the Titans. That's a short week game. That'll be a Thursday night contest down in Lucas Oil Stadium. So the Colts will stay at home, part of three straight at home for the Colts, because the following game after the Jets will be the Jaguars at home. Those are games I think the Colts should win. But then they go to the Bills. They've got Tampa Bay coming into Lucas Oil Stadium, and they still have games in the future. In December, they'll play the Patriots at home. I think they're better than the Patriots. I think the Colts should be expected to beat New England, especially with a rookie quarterback. But you saw what the Patriots are capable of and what they did to the Jets yesterday. You've got the Cardinals, and the other thing too, playing the Patriots late in the season is probably an advantage to the Patriots, because you've got more experience for Mac Jones.
Yeah, definitely. I think, to me, that's one of the toss-up games remaining. I think the Raiders might be the other. The rest are winnable, with the exception of at the Cardinals, the Bucks at home, and at the Bills.
Yeah, because after they play the Patriots, they go to Arizona to play the Cardinals, host the Las Vegas Raiders the following week. They end with the Jaguars down in Jacksonville. But, I mean, you could... Even if the Colts do well, you could see a game or two in there that they could lose. And yet you look at Tennessee's schedule, and I'm not sure that you see two losses. So it's still going to be tough for the Colts, even if with a head-to-head win. And part of that is because Tennessee was able to win both games they've had the last 2 weeks against Buffalo and Kansas City, and they beat the Chiefs decisively. How concerned does Kansas City have to be, not about getting the ship right, but about making the playoffs? Because I'm not sure the Kansas City's in a position where they're even going to make the playoffs.
They need to be very concerned. I mean, you have one of the worst, if not the worst, statistically by now, defense in the NFL. You have Patrick Mahomes, who gets banged up because the offensive line is struggling. And you just have a team that's just completely floundering. It is surprising. And we thought, oh, they just started slow. But it's clear that this is a trend and not, you know, an anomaly with the Chiefs being bad team.
This is what the Chiefs are. They're not a real good football team right now. And we think they've got more talent than what they're showing. But Mahomes is nothing close to what we've seen from Mahomes. And the thing about Mahomes is he's always been lauded for his freelancing, for the way he could, you know, think about the fact that when he threw the no-look pass, everybody went crazy. Mahomes is throwing no-look passes. He's thrown passes sidearm. He's flipped passes. Has he thrown one behind his back yet? I don't know. I'm thinking that I probably have missed that. But he's always been that type of a quarterback, right? He wouldn't do things necessarily by the book, and he wasn't necessarily the most technical of quarterbacks. Well, I think now he's paying the price because he's scrambling around trying to make plays. And whether the league has caught up with him or whether it's just caught up with Mahomes that he's mistake prone, he's throwing balls. He's throwing interceptions. He's fumbling the football, turning it over. And then you turn it over with that offense against a bad defense. It just puts you down. It's a 2-score swing because you then give up the football. And the other team seems to have no problem scoring against your defense. So Kansas City is in a – I guess let me ask this, Cable. Who's in a worse spot, Kansas City or the Colts?
Kansas City, because they simply don't have a defense that can stop anyone, whereas the Colts' defense has improved after a little bit of a rough start to the season. And Darius Leonard's making plays, it seems. Xavier Rhodes with a big play. I think the Colts defense has righted the ship. Kansas City, I don't see how they're going to fix anything midseason.
Both teams are 3-4. For Kansas City, they do play a number one schedule, which is always supposed to be a little tougher than what the Colts have, although the Colts schedule, no cakewalk. But the Chiefs still have the Packers, the Cowboys, the Raiders. They got the Raiders twice. They still play the Chargers, who already have a victory over the Chiefs. They've got the Steelers at home. The Chiefs will go to the Bengals. And the way the Bengals are playing, I'm not counting out the Bengals in that one. So it's not an easy schedule. A 3-4 record right now. I think the Chiefs are in a world of hurt just to make the playoffs. Kind of tough to imagine that Patrick Mahomes won't be part of the AFC playoffs. 46862, Parkview Sports Medicine text line. By the way, watch college football quite a bit on Saturday. I've got my top four as of this week. Georgia, and it might be a good thing that Georgia didn't play this week because some of the teams that didn't look real good. But Georgia, I've got number one. You know who I think is the second best team in the country right now? Ohio State. Yeah, I know the opponent was Indiana. It's a beaten-up Indiana team that hasn't exactly performed well up to this point in the season. They have got quarterback issues, but, man, Ohio State dominated in all phases of the game against Indiana on Saturday. That's a good Ohio State team, and if C.J. Stroud continues to play as well as he's playing, they got the running game. They've got a trio of really good wide receivers led by Chris Olave. That's a really good Ohio State team. I know they got beat by Oregon, but I'm not going to sit here and put a lot of weight in a game that happened, week two? I mean, let's talk about where the team is at right now, and I think Ohio State's the second best team in the country because Alabama, I think, still has issues. Now, Alabama's really good, but I think Alabama has to win shootouts. I just don't think they have the defense they've had at Alabama in past years. Finally, the fourth best team, I will give credit to Cincinnati. I went through and thought, I don't know if anybody's better. Now, the best of the next group, here's the next four that I've got. Right on the edge of these four, I've got Michigan, Mississippi, Oklahoma, and Oregon. Those are my next four. I think if anybody slips up at the top, any of these four can probably earn a way into that top four. And then the next group includes Michigan State, who I still haven't bought into the Spartans yet. I'm not convinced that the Spartans are as high as they're being ranked. Iowa, which I think they're a little bit of a fraud as well, and Notre Dame. And again, same thing. I think Notre Dame is good, but I don't think they've had the toughest schedule, and I think that they've survived, but they haven't exactly dominated.
Notre Dame is a team that's benefiting the rest of the way from a very weak schedule. I mean, USC's completely flamed out. North Carolina is massively underperformed. They're a team that in any other year, you're looking at, you know, 15 to 20 range. I think, to me, Michigan and Michigan State both will find out a lot about them this Saturday when they meet up, because I'm not convinced the passing game for Michigan can really get it done in a big game, because they're just an all-running team. I mean, they have a quarterback who's throwing for like 120 yards total in the game. So, and Michigan State, great running back. They have a good receiver. Quarterback play is so-so. I don't know. I'm not sold on the back half of the Big Ten in general. I mean, Penn State's already exited themselves with poor play.
Do you lose? You get 9 chances to beat Illinois and you go 0-9. 9 overtimes.
I don't like that overtime
9
rule.
Overtimes and the game's still an under. I mean, have you ever heard such a thing?
Well, they changed the overtime rule where they're going for 2-point conversions.
Yeah, but 6 straight overtimes with no one scoring, a 2-point conversion? Seriously?
It's pretty bad. So Penn State, see ya. They can play spoiler, though, against Ohio State. I don't think so, but I mean, they can. And just the Big Ten back half, everyone except Ohio State, not convinced they're actually going to finish in the top 10.
So what do you think about my top four? Georgia, Ohio State, Alabama, Cincinnati.
I know that Cincinnati played poorly. To me, I'm not going to move them from number 2 until they meet up with SMU. That's my true judgment point, but I agree with the four teams that are in there.
46862, Parkview Sports Medicine text line, 46862. We're going to take a break. When we come back on the other side, Don Fisher, legendary voice of the Indiana Hoosiers, he's going to join us. It's our 15 Minutes with Fish being presented by Cruzy Automotive Service. It's on the other side of the break on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Welcome back to the Sports Rush, your daily local sports fix, 4 to 6. Brett Rump with Caleb Hatch. And every week at this time, we get a chance to sit and visit with the legendary Hall of Fame voice of the Indiana Hoosiers. It, of course, is Don Fisher, and our 15 Minutes with Fish presented each and every week by Cruzy Automotive Service. Well, Don, after Indiana falls 54-7 to the Ohio State Buckeyes Saturday night, under the lights, in the rain, down in Bloomington, I guess, can we consider it officially basketball season now at Indiana?
Well, that was the joke for years and years, that, you know, you get 3 weeks or 4 weeks into the football season, and you start talking about basketball. And honestly, that's what it feels like right now with this football team, after having such a horrific performance on Saturday, in which not only the offense struggled as they have all season long, but the defense also had their pants fall down, because without question, they could not handle anything Ohio State was putting on the field on Saturday. And thank goodness Ohio State took their foot off the gas pedal in the second half, or it could have really, really been ugly. But this Indiana football team is in trouble right now, Brett. I don't know what the answers are. I'm not a coach. I can just tell you what I see. And what concerns me the most is that I didn't see the fight in this ball club, especially on the defensive side of the field, that I've seen all season long. The defense, as you know, has carried this team up to this point in the season. despite the fact that they did win two ball games against lesser competition in Idaho and Western Kentucky, and all the rest of their competition has been top 10 teams that they have not been able to handle, but at least there were in ball games. Obviously, the Michigan State loss, the Cincinnati loss, even the Penn State loss, if the offense had done anything in those ball games, Indiana probably would have come out of there with a win or two, or maybe even three. Unfortunately, that didn't happen, and now you concern yourself with the fact that this team has lost each of the games that we were expected to at least compete in, and they are in a real hurt right now mentally, I think. That's where I come from, because that's the first thing you look at is this team still fighting? On Saturday, I didn't see much of that fight, especially against this great Ohio State team that they faced.
And I guess explain the defense to me, because it could be just the lack of effort, but it's a little concerning. You've got a head coach who comes from the defensive side of the football. You've got a defense that at times has shown they can be pretty effective. They can force some turnovers. But I'll be honest, Ohio State just did whatever they darn well pleased in that game. I gave it till about the end of the first quarter, Don. I'll be honest with you. I don't know what time you shut it off, but I shut it off about the end of the first quarter.
Well, trust me, I couldn't shut it off. That's the problem with you if you're the play-by-play guy. There's no way to shut it off. Or you can fake an injury, I guess. But the problem...
Losing the voice a bit.
Yeah, you can start coughing and, I got a problem here. But what it boils down to, again, is that very thing, is there didn't seem to be much fight. And I don't want to say that these guys gave up, but Ohio State made them look like they did. And Ohio State is really good. They're better than I anticipated they would be, because they are a young team. I mean, they're not just a team that's got a bunch of veterans out there, and they do have veterans on this ball club. But they lost about half of their ball club a year ago to graduation or guys that went to the NFL. And these new guys that they brought in have been improving. And we heard Ryan Day talk about this the last couple of weeks in their press conferences about how much better these freshmen have been playing. And we experienced it on Saturday because they dominated Indiana in every aspect. And the only bright spot that you could take from this ball game was that when Jack Tuttle was the quarterback, he took Indiana right down the field, just like Ohio State went down against them in the first series of the ball game and scored. Indiana came right back and did exactly the same thing on their offensive possession. And they went right down the field. They had three great catches by Peyton Hendershot. Two of them were spectacular grabs that kept the drive alive. And then, of course, the touchdown catch. But on that touchdown throw, Jack Tuttle got hammered by Ohio State defensively after he released the football, and he went down with a foot or a lower leg injury of some kind. They did x-rays afterwards. They said the x-rays proved negative, but he was still limping. They brought him back out on the sideline. By that time, the game was already out of hand, but he came back out. They tried to put him in there, and he limped onto the field. I don't know why they put him back in, but he wasn't able to go after that. And, of course, Donovan McCulley, who came in as the freshman, a true freshman from Lawrence North High School and a very good football player, he was put in a tough spot because they had developed a couple of packages for him to play in the ball game no matter what, because they've got to get him ready in case, something happened to Jack. Well, something did happen. He wasn't ready. He went out there and looked like a chicken with his head cut off. He didn't appear to know what he was doing. It was because they were trying to run those packages against an Ohio State team that they're just waiting with bated breath to see what he could do, and he couldn't do much of anything. And then, of course, in the second half, I think he settled down a little bit. He looked like he had a little more control of what he was trying to do. But he was put in a tough spot. And, of course, they played a walk-on named Grant Gremmel from Noblesville, a redshirt sophomore who's been in the program for his third year. They got him in there to kind of take the heat off of McCulley for a short time. But, boy, this team just looks like it's a mess at this point. And I don't know how serious the mental side of things are for this ball club right now, if they've given up the ship, so to speak. They do have games coming up that they have a chance to win, But they're going to have to start playing so much better on the offensive side of the football if they're going to have a chance, number one. And the defense has got to return to what we've seen in the previous ball games prior to Saturday if they're going to have any chance in any way in any of these ball games coming up.
One thing Saturday did do for us, it gave us a look inside the quarterback room. I think we've met everybody that has QB next to their name on this Indiana roster. I'm not sure if anybody's still left. Michael Penix, what does it tell us about his situation? Is this something that's probably more serious than Indiana was leading on?
No, I mean, an AC sprain to the shoulder is always serious, especially if it's your throwing shoulder, and because it takes a while for that to heal. And I don't know what his status is. I don't think that the injury status for him has been anything other than it's just going to take time for it to heal, and we don't know when that's going to be. He was not dressed for Saturday's ball game. He hasn't practiced. I think he's done, you know, some of the things he can do with his legs and those kinds of things from a workout standpoint, but he has not done any throwing, I don't think, since he had the injury. And I don't know if that's going to take, if that's going to change here in the next couple of days or a couple of weeks, whatever the case may be. We're just kind of waiting and holding our breath to see if he can come back. And Tuttle's injury, we don't know much about that either. They said the x-rays were negative when they took him in for that. They said they're going to give him an MRI, I guess, maybe yesterday. We may know something today in the press conference when we hear from Coach Allen as to what the status of Jack Tuttle might be. But if he's not available, they have got a true freshman at quarterback because there's nobody else at this point on scholarship. Dexter Williams, the other guy that was on scholarship and still is, but he had an ACL back in the spring, and he's out for the rest of the year. He's not going to play at all this season. So they're really down to a true freshman and backup quarterbacks if Jack Tuttle can't go.
Don Fisher joining us on the Masters Heating and Cooling Hotline. And, you know, Don, I do want to at least touch on basketball as the Hoosiers getting set. Of course, this is the time of year you start to get into the secret scrimmage or the exhibition and start to learn a little more about this basketball team. We did get a teaser when they played in the Bahamas. But as far as heading into the season, what do you have on your mind that you're looking for out of the Hoosiers? What are the question marks that you want to have answered when this season gets started?
Well, I want to know if the defensive side of the basketball it can hold up, because they really look good in the Bahamas. And those two games down there, the thing that stood out to me was how well they played at the defensive end of the floor. And I've seen that in practice. I've seen at least one practice now for the last 3 weeks in a row. And I just what I've watched to see is if that defensive play had that, you know, that toughness, that physicality to it that we've wanted to see for a long time now and hadn't the last couple of years. And I see a defense that is better by far than what we saw last season. So I want to see if that holds up when they start playing for real against college competition. The teams that they played in the Bahamas, the team that they played down there was a Serbian pro team that had a lot of length to it and all those kinds of things. Not the greatest athletes in the world, but they were long and tall guys that could all shoot it. And Indiana shut them down. So if this defense can hold up against a team like that, I think it's going to have a chance to do the same with most of these college teams that they're going to face. And then the other question mark and the thing that we're going to have to see is it's got to improve if they're going to win ball games, and that's the shooting. Those are the two things right now. Defense and shooting the basketball, they're going to be critical for this team. If they can continue to make progress in those two areas, then I think they're going to be a really good basketball team and a fun team to watch.
We know who Mike Woodson played for when he was at IU. Any chance the Hoosiers show us zone at all?
It's a possibility because Mike is innovative, and I've seen him practice the zone a little bit. It's going to be interesting to see if he does play some zone, because Mike played on a team that never played zone.
Yeah, right.
Indiana under Bob Knight, zone was like, what'd you say? I mean, how do you spell that? So zone defense was not in the repertoire of Bob Knight. I mean, I'm not saying that they never played a zone. But here's what they did do. They did play kind of a matchup zone every now and then just to throw people off. But honestly, you rarely ever saw a zone when Bob Knight was the head coach at Indiana, and I think it'll be the same scenario with Mike. But perhaps not so much, because Mike is, like I said, he's very innovative, especially with his offenses, and I think it's going to be interesting to see if he throws a little zone in there every now and then, because I've seen him practice it.
Interesting. All right, always appreciate you, Don. Have a great week. We'll talk to you next Monday.
Thanks for having me, Brett.
Absolutely. That is Don Fisher joining us on the Masters Heating and Cooling Hotline, the Hall of Fame legendary voice of the Indiana Hoosiers. Tough win for the Hoosiers on Saturday. 54-7, they fall to Ohio State. Tell you what, I'm starting to believe Ohio State is making great progress, and they are pushing right up there into the top three discussion in the country. Now, I know that's not where they're ranked, but tell me that that team that took the field, that had balance offensively, that was very difficult, especially taking away the run from Indiana, which has not been good against anybody, let's be honest. But I kind of just felt like what we saw on Saturday, that's better than a number 5 or 6 team in the country. That looked like a playoff team. Ohio State 54, Indiana 7. So what's up next for the Hoosiers? They've got, as Don said, perhaps a winnable game. They go to Maryland on Saturday. That game will be out in Maryland, a noon kickoff, but we'll see how the Hoosiers fare. Our 15 Minutes with Fish, always presented by Cruzy Automotive Service. Stop at Cruzy, tell them you heard it here on the Sports Rush, and you can get an oil change for just $15.75. Go to Cruzy Automotive Service, Lima Road, north of Wallen, south of Till, right behind the Shell gas station. We got to take a time out. We're coming back. Plenty more here on the Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Welcome back to the Sports Rush, your daily local sports fix, 4 to 6. Brett Rump, Caleb Hatch, you're connected. Parkview Sports Medicine text line 46862. So, Braves, Astros, World Series matchup. Don't know that this is the exciting matchup we wanted. I think everybody would have preferred to see the Dodgers-Astros matchup. The Braves, obviously, stripped that one away from us. I was surprised the Braves were able to get it done and knock the Dodgers out, but I really don't have much of a thought on the Braves and Astros. To me, it's like, well, it's pretty clear the Astros are going to be better than the Braves, but are we short-selling what the Braves offer? I don't know. I'm surprised the Braves beat the Dodgers, I can tell you that. But anyway, enjoy the World Series.
It's like I'm curious, but it doesn't feel like it's must watch, right? I mean, the Braves had a good season and they beat the Dodgers after, you know, having a chance last year and falling short. And they have some talented people, but it's not like a team that has a lot of name guys on it. I think that's part of the problem, why people aren't that excited.
And maybe it's just that we don't know them as name guys because they haven't been at this stage. I mean, maybe guys become name guys because they play in the World Series.
It's true.
A lot of them.
I mean, like Freddie Freeman, that I'm looking at the roster. I know who he is. Mm-hmm. The Eddie Rosario guy, I learned who he was in the postseason.
He had a heck of a series.
And Jock Peterson, who's kind of bounced around. Jorge Soler. Okay. That's about it.
Albies?
Who?
Albies. Albies. Isn't it Albies?
Who?
Not listed there? 46862, Parkview Sports Medicine text line. I don't know his first name.
Oh, Ozzy. Okay, I'm like, I couldn't understand what you were saying. Ozzy Albies, yes. Albies. He's one of the infielders.
Yeah. So anyway, the Comets got the season started this weekend. How about the Comets, what they did this weekend? Out of the Memorial Coliseum, not only 7,500 fans presented the rings, raised the banner. John Sidlowski on hand to help with the raising of the banner. Good to see that Sid seems to be doing well with the back. Of course, he had back surgery a couple of months ago and about 2 months away, I think, from potentially being eligible to return to play. According to Justin Cohn, he's made it onto the ice and has started his skating as part of his rehab. But he was on hand. Also, in fact, he did color on the broadcast with Shane Alberani on our sister station, WoWo, on Saturday night. But the Comets fell behind 3-1 second period.
And then they started chipping away and eventually won the game 4-3, dramatic finish. The kid in goal from Vegas didn't do so well early, but he seemed to become more comfortable as the game went on. It was not Lekas that ended up in goal, but it was the kid from Vegas is all I can say because I don't know his name. But he ended up getting the win in net for the Comets. They have started the season 1-0, and now they get to kind of rest on their victory for a week because they don't play again until next Saturday when they go up to Kalamazoo to take on the Kalamazoo Wings. Kind of crazy the way this schedule is, why the Comets only play one game each of the two first weekends before they really start ramping up the schedule. I don't know if that is to give all the teams, if it's across the board in the ECHL, to give teams a chance to get some of their AHL guys onto the roster. I'm not sure, but good win for the Comets. Colts last night get the victory in the downpour out in San Francisco. One concern still, offensive line, waiting for Braden Smith to return. I keep thinking this is the week. Okay, maybe it's this week that we'll see Braden Smith. Not exactly sure if he'll be available this week against Tennessee, but I would love to see the Colts have a very small injury list for this game against the Titans because this is basically the season on the line for the Colts. And I watched the offensive line quite a bit and just watched the blocks. First of all, the Colts, as I said earlier in the show, have the best blocking tight ends you will find in the NFL. And I will stand by that. And I think that's because Jack Doyle has always been pretty solid as a blocker. Not great, but pretty solid. But Mo Alie-Cox has really dominated as a blocking tight end. Now, we know he can go downfield and make plays because he's athletic, he's tall, he's got size. But, man, just watch this guy block. He not only takes a guy out of the hole, but he moves him about 4 or 5 yards on his blocks. He does a terrific job. But I watched the offensive line. Eric Fisher had trouble with Bosa all night long. Really had trouble. Bosa just too quick around the edge. He was able to get Fisher leaning and bust him inside a couple times. The only thing Fisher could do to slow down Bosa was to chop him and take out his legs. He did that a few times. But Fisher clearly struggling at left tackle. Pryor was in at right tackle. He was okay, although he had a bad holding call that I thought was going to cost the Colts dearly when he kind of just reached out and half grabbed a guy as Wentz was making the dive for the first down. I thought it was a needless block and it turned into a penalty. But I thought Quentin Nelson was okay, but got caught holding a couple of times, and it was pretty blatant that he was holding. I mean, he had a real grip on the guy trying to pull him and move him out of the hole. Those weren't good penalties for Big Q. If you're going to kind of build yourself as a brand of being a big-bodied, tough guy at the line of scrimmage, you got to put the pads on somebody, you got to hit them, and you got to displace them with your size and strength, not by grabbing somebody and trying to move them with your hands and arms. But Quentin Nelson returned. Ryan Kelly, I think, a solid at center. I think the right guard spot, now that Quentin Nelson is back, Chris Reed, Mark Lewinsky, kind of splitting the reps at right guard. Here's the question for you. With the problems that Fisher is having, would you consider trying to move Fisher to the right side to put Braden Smith in at the left, or is that just a totally stupid idea because guys are either left tackles or right tackles? And comparing it to hockey, which we just talked about, it's like, why would you put a left wing on the other side? But the speed rush in the NFL usually comes from the quarterback's blind side. It's usually going to come from the offensive line's left tackle position. Right now, Fisher, and I think part of it is because of the rehab from the injury. I don't think he's back to 100% as far as his quickness and footwork. Would you consider, even though Braden Smith would also be coming back from injury, flip-flopping those two guys to try to see if that would work for the rest of the season and provide better protection for Carson Wentz?
I'm not going to be pretending to be an expert on offensive line play here. It's an intriguing, you know, solution. You know, once Braden Smith comes back and is healthy, I just think these guys spend all the reps at, you know, a certain position. And guys, you know, you move right and left guards around from time to time. Sometimes they may even have to play center, you know, depending on injuries. Tackles doesn't seem like one that gets kind of switched up that often.
No, it's a real specialized position, left and right side. I'm just curious for those that maybe the coaches or those that have played tackle, if they would have an opinion on this, whether or not it is even possible to try to bring Braden Smith back to bring him into left tackle, because it's like being a left-hander and then being told you're going to have to write the quiz using your right hand. Everything gets backwards. 4-6-8-6-2. By the way, speaking of offensive lines, I did see the big fella, Joe Tippmann, former Bishop Dwenger star. I did see he's playing center in that Wisconsin line. That's why I did not see him. I told you I was watching Wisconsin. I didn't see Tippmann out there. It's because I wasn't looking for him at center. 330 pounds, 6'5", I think he is, 330, playing center in that Wisconsin offensive line, which actually did line him up across from Lawrence Johnson a few times when Wisconsin played Purdue on Saturday. But I did see Tippmann, just a sophomore, but he is in the starting lineup for the Wisconsin Badgers. 4-6-8-6-2, Parkview Sports Medicine text line. Tough loss for Purdue. You know, Purdue, we talked about last week, we liked their chances at getting to a bowl better than, obviously, Indiana, with the schedule Indiana had ahead of them. But it's like giving back the win you had at Iowa and just kind of returning it. It's like return to sender, because you go on the road, you win a tough game against a nationally ranked opponent, you put yourself into a position where you not only can earn a bowl, but let's face it, you could possibly even earn your way into a Big Ten championship game if you win out. And then they give it right back and lose at home, and lose badly to Wisconsin at home. The revolving quarterback situation at Purdue, it's been debated, it's been discussed. Everybody thinks it can't work. Everybody says, oh, well, look, it is working when it works. But then you have a game like Saturday where it doesn't work. Does Purdue have to find one guy and just let him ride it?
Well, what's puzzling to me is outside of the Iowa upset where Aiden O'Connell played and played really well. I mean, Jack Plummer on the season, I believe 7 touchdowns, no picks, and they're riding O'Connell. I mean, clearly it must be something that's similar with Notre Dame, where one guy is separating themselves so much in practice that they've earned the start for the games. For Purdue, yeah, you have to be disappointed that they had that opportunity to, you know, potentially go the distance in the Big Ten West, and now the expectation is a bowl game. They still can get there. They have IU at home, Northwestern at Wrigley Field, at Nebraska, mixing with Michigan State and Ohio State, which are not really winnable games, except it would be very Purdue thing for them to pull those upsets off.
I could see Purdue beating a Michigan State. I still think Michigan State might be a little inflated. Ohio State, not giving them much of a chance. I don't think Ohio State's going to fall to Purdue, because I think from here on out, Ohio State's always going to be serious when they take on Purdue. But, you know, you do catch teams in a trap week, whatever. 4-6-8-6-2, Parkview Sports Medicine text line. Quick timeout. We come back. It is a Monday edition of the Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Pacers at home tonight, taking on the Milwaukee Bucks, and you can hear all the action right here at 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM, starting with the pregame at 6:30. Tip will be just after 7, and then following the Pacers and Bucks, we will join the Saints Seahawks Monday Night Football game here on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. A reminder, coming up tomorrow, we've got the Mastodons Coaches Show season premiere. We'll have men's basketball coach John Kaufman. We'll also have women's basketball coach Maria Marcassano. You can join us live in person at the Holiday Inn across from the Coliseum, or you can tune in from 6 to 7 tomorrow night right after the Sports Rush here at 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Thanks to Don Fisher for joining the show, talking little Indiana Hoosiers football and basketball. Did get a basketball question in with Fish. He'll be back with us every Monday, always presented by Cruzy Automotive Service, our 15 Minutes with Fish.
Hope you have a great Monday night. We're coming back tomorrow. Kevin Bowen among our guests on tomorrow's show. And then on Wednesday, we've got Coach D, Kevin Donnelly. He'll be on the show at 5:20 at his regular time coming up this Wednesday. That will do it for us. We'll be back tomorrow. Have a great Monday night. Maybe a little Dancing with the Stars tonight, Caleb. We'll have to put it on the show sheet tomorrow. Get a complete breakdown. We'll let you be our Len. Is it Len Goodman, the judge? We'll let you be our own Len Goodman and judge the performances that you see tonight on Dancing with the Stars. Because if you like DC, I know you will tune in. That does it for Caleb Hatch. I'm Brett Rump. Thanks for listening to The Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM.
Podcasts by Federated Media.